So in terms of SAS, what did you do?
I had a number of roles. One minute you're a sniper commander. Next minute you're hiding out in an OP. Next minute you're undercover doing a surveillance job.
You spend so much time faffing around doing the wrong thing. And I think in business, you've got to do what needs to be done and grow your comfort zone like you grow a muscle.
You're a product of your environment. So you want to surround yourself with positive, driven, motivated people. And you get swept along in that culture.
Being resilient, having that mentality, is that something you're born with or you're not?
Even as a six-month-old kid, you've got a lot of resilience. That resilience tank either goes up or goes down. But that should give us hope, because that means it's not finite. It means we've got the ability to shift that by putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations.
Have you had any run-ins with media?
Yeah, I've had plenty of run-ins. That hurt because it had a lot of third-party damage. I was pretty close to suing the media.
Are we getting weaker as men, do you think? Well, Colin, thank you so much for coming on the property podcast that we've got. And the reason I wanted to get you down today is because obviously you're well known and you've got background in the SAS. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about leadership, teamwork, and also a resilient mind, because I think that that goes across all different industries. If you've got a sharp, resilient mind, I think that's going to be super beneficial, especially for business people, tough times in business. So would you be able to start just by maybe telling us a little bit about your background and how you became so well-known, what you're most well-known for anyone that might not know?
Yeah, well, Special Forces is probably what I'm most well-known for. The Channel 4 series, SAS Who Dares Wins. Obviously, I'm on the speaking circuit, get involved with video games. I've been in the video game industry now for about 18, 19 years. And so, yeah, and books and everything else. So that's probably what most people would know me for.
I think the fact that you've got a Scottish accent makes you even more scary. When did you first kind of rise to fame? When did people start stopping you in the streets? Was it the show?
Yeah, I think so. I think after the Channel 4 show, that's probably when the profile started to rise. And I think like anything through, particularly nowadays with social media and everything else, it's easy to be linked into things. And then before you know it, your profile's increased. And it was actually the guys at Channel 4 that said, you know, you should have a Twitter profile and Instagram and everything else. And before that, I'd never been that busy with social media. But I think from a profile perspective and also a business perspective, it's a really useful tool.
Yeah. So right now, where does your income come from? I mean, you do speaking, you've got books, you've got different things going on. What's your kind of main...
Yeah, and I think this probably applies to the sort of property world as well, is that I try not to have too many eggs in one basket. So the speaking part's one. I do a lot of workshops. I have a corporate team building company, Stoic Events, where we take companies on team building, do stuff for video games. So there's probably a mix of different things. And then whenever the TV stuff or there's book stuff, then that as well.
So when you're doing team building, then corporate events, because we do a lot of team building with our company, we've got about 55 employees, members of staff. What do you think the biggest takeaways are for the companies? What are the kind of aha moments and when you're running these workshops with the staff?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few, and I think that it ranges. So there'll be individuals within the organization that will surprise you in certain situations. I think.
What you mean? You'll think they're really good. We didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. Particularly for things that you wouldn't think. So, you know, the most quiet person is suddenly, you know, becomes the leader or becomes the expert in explosives or, yeah, you know, things that you wouldn't necessarily think of. I think the networking part within the team, you know, when you put people in difficult situations, mm-hmm, I think they grow from that. You know, as I'm saying that, I see behind you, you've got the get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think that's apt, you know. Yeah. We only grow that resilience by putting ourselves in those situations. And I think that's one of the things that the team building stuff does.
I think it's really important to do team building. One of the things we did a few months ago with our team building was we got all the departments, customer service, sales, finance, we set them all a task. So, right, finance guys, you need to do all this invoicing and whatever. Sales guys, you need to hit the phones, call. And then we said, however, you're switching departments. So everyone did everyone's job. So you had the finance guys hitting the phones, doing sales, then the sales guys having to do the invoicing. And I think then people realized, so some people are like, man, your job's so hard. I now respect you and I have a new level of respect for this department. But there were some people that were better at that person's job. I'm thinking, we were going to fire you. You're really, maybe we need to move you around. Yeah, yeah. And so it's you know, it's very, very good and it's interesting. So in terms of SAS, for anyone that doesn't know, what did you do? What was your role in SAS, which stands for what?
Special Air Service.
So what were you doing?
So in the SAS, I had a number of roles, and I think that's one of the great things about being in the Special Forces. One minute you're a sniper commander, next minute you're hiding out in an OP, next minute you're in sort of undercover doing a surveillance job. So
a sniper commander?
Yeah.
Is that telling other snipers what to do and when to shoot?
Yeah, it's kind of coordinating that. So jeez. So you might have a situation, you might have eight snipers out in the ground, and it's known when's the exact moment to be able to get the most out of everyone taking the shot at the same time.
Yeah, that sounds rough. That sounds rough. I don't know if I'd have the stomach and that to be doing that.
Oh,
I
mean, you'd have the stomach.
Bro, I went to, I was in Thailand, and there was an opportunity to just, you know, a little shooting range, shoot guns. I'd never shot a gun before. This was last year. And I got I don't know what it even was, like a Glock or something. And I got to shoot a target out, fine. It wasn't a person, obviously, just a target. Holding the gun, the power of it, the magnitude of it, I remember shooting, boom. And I was like, oh, I almost felt, to you, it's probably stupid because of your background in the SES. But for me, shooting a gun, and just the thought of, man, if I just turned around and shot someone, I'd blow the head off. The magnitude of it. I found shooting the gun, even if it was just at a target, quite a scary experience. Do you know what I mean?
Or yeah, not? It's quite exhilarating. And I think every soldier that fires their first shot goes through that. And like anything in life, the more you do it, the more comfortable you are doing it.
Right.
And the more you kind of process it and then fine tune what you're doing until you're better at it. And that's the same for everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the reasons that I wanted to, I mean, you're speaking tonight at the Property Investors Academy dinner, which is going to be amazing. And I think the topic is resilience. How do you grow a resilient mindset? Because I was talking even last month to Linda Plant from The Apprentice, who's Lord Sugar's business advisor. And I asked her, I said, in one word, what's the most important thing that you need in business? And she said, resilience. Being resilient, having that mentality, is that something you're born with or you're not? Is it something you can grow? Could you just talk us through having that resilience and how to grow it, how to get it?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say, are you born with that? Because I think people have a preconception that you're born and you're resilient, or you're born and you're not.
Right.
And I think I would tell anybody that if they can remember back to when they were about 6 months old and you're learning to walk, you don't know you can walk, but you're going to try, and you might fall over. You might fail hundreds, maybe thousands of times. You might hurt yourself, but you're not put off by failure. You're not put off because you hurt yourself. You keep going until eventually you get up and you walk. And that means even as a 6-month-old kid, you've got a lot of resilience. And depending on what you go through in life, that resilience tank either goes up or goes down. But that should give us hope, because that means it's not finite. It means I'm not 63% resilient, you're 72% resilient. It means we've got the ability to shift that by putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives us a bit of strength, because it means I can grow that. And controversially, I can pass it on.
Mm. And I think as well, in terms of like walking, you're never going to have parents where their little kid says, oh, I can't walk, I'm struggling. And they go, you know what? Don't worry about it. Just crawl. It's fine. Just don't worry about it. You're never going to have that. The normal, walking is normal. So it's like, no, you have to do this. And I think in the same way for me, I mean, growing up pretty working class background, being around successful people, people that are doing stuff, growing businesses, buying properties. If you're around people where that's just normal, you just think, man, I'm just going to have to keep going until I do it. If you're around mediocre people that aren't successful, aren't getting uncomfortable, aren't pushing themselves, it's just like, you know what? I can walk, I can talk, I've got a job, I'm doing okay, I'm happy here, I'm happy average. I think it's really important to get into a different environment where you're around people that are successful, that are winning, and then it makes you feel like, man, I've just got to keep going until I get up. Even normal things like, I've just had them today hitting the phones, talk about resilience. It's a bit different from SAS stuff. Some of the guys were scared to pick up the phone. I'd say, ring, oh, you found a deal. On Rightmove. Yeah, man, pick up the phone, call the agent. And some of these newbies, they're there with their phone, they're like this. They're just calling Dixons. They're going to speak to some 23-year-old Stacy from an office, and they're like, hands are shaking. But then when they do it, Oh, no, the property's gone. Oh, okay. I want too bad. And then by the end of the day, they just pat, 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 pat. We spend so much time faffing around, doing the wrong thing, floating around designing logos. And I think in business and to be successful, you got to do what needs to be done and grow your comfort zone like you grow a muscle.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And I talk a little bit today about perspective, and you're a product of your environment. So you want to surround yourself with positive, driven, motivated people, and that you get swept along in that culture. A big part of what today is about. And I think for anybody that's been pushed out that zone, parachuting's a good example. Mm. You know, the first time you go skydiving, you think you're on that, you're ready to go. Yeah, you're scared, you're nervous. Everything that might go wrong is going through in your head. But when you do it, what do you think the first thing that happens when your feet touch the ground? You want to go back up and do it again.
Yeah. It's funny the way you said that. Way you check out. You know, the first time you go skydiving, I don't think most people listen to probably ever. have you skydived? Presumably, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Many times?
I've got about 500 jumps.
500 jumps. Do you know what? I can't quite match that. I've got 12 bungee jumps.
That'll do.
But it's the same though.
Yeah.
First time jumped bungee, you're there, you're shaking, and then you do it, and then you're right. In fact, the second you actually jump, you're like, this is bliss.
Yeah.
But it's the fear of the thinking about it, isn't it? How do you stop that? How do you get over the procrastination, the little voices, and the, same with the phone call. Being on the phone to the agent is not bad. Thinking about what could happen, all the things that might, how do you get over that procrastination and those little voices in your head?
I think it's that thing about trust the process, control the controllables, because everything else you can. And like you've said, the minute that you're on the phone, the minute that you do that bungee jump, the minute that you jump out the plane, everything's okay. You've worried about all the stuff that hasn't actually happened. Right. It's in the future. It might happen. Things that might go wrong. I remember a quote from Tiger Woods saying, I go up and there's this ball. It's difficult. It's plugged against a tree. It's in the mud. I'm the 1%. And the 99% will think about all the things that might go wrong. I might top it, plug it, I'll miss it, I'll shank it. He said, I think about the 1%. I think about the one time I hit that ball so clean, perfectly, and I replay it over and over in my mind. And I think about it, and that's the last thing I think about when I hit the ball. He goes, 99 times out of 100, it'll go all right.
That's great. What are your favorite companies to work with when you're doing all the team building and going out doing these talks?
I like the ones that seem to grow more. So, and they're all different. So I've had lots of CrossFitters who want more physical stuff. I've had a group of dentists that just want to work with each other. They're going through change management. So I think any organization that I feel like everybody, the majority of the people there have grown from the time they walked through the door to the time they walk back out of it, that's gold.
Do you think we're getting, as men, your SAS? Tough guy, done 500 parachute jumps. Are we getting weaker as men, do you think? Or do you think that that's just a misconception from people on TikTok? Because there's certainly a lot, you know, I see a lot of people say, oh, we're going soft. And do you think that's true? Are we going soft? How do we get on in a war right now? Would the men fight?
I don't think we're postured for war now. I don't think there's no political appetite for war. There's no public appetite for war. And we've shrunk our forces. So I think the world's always going to change one way or another. Yeah, we might think, you know, people my age might think people coming through now, there might not be the same. But I'm sure the people from the wartime period probably thought the same about me and my generation. So I think we're changing. And, you know, you hear horror stories like in the depots now, you know, the recruits that are coming through. If the recruit doesn't like the way the instructor's speaking to them or shouting too loud or telling them to do press-ups, doesn't want to do it, you can give him a yellow card and he has to go away. And if he comes back and does it again, he gets another yellow card, that's a red card, and he gets RTU to his unit. And I think, well, what kind of soldiers are we creating for the battlefield if we do that? Because, you know, once you're behind enemy lines, things are a lot worse than people shout at and at you, you know?
But that's no different from parenting, is it? Like, I put on chat, you know, use ChatGPT.
Yeah, yeah.
ChatGPT is weak, in my opinion. And I just thought, let's see how weak ChatGPT is. So I asked it a question. I said, if my 8-year-old boy, I got 4 kids. I said, if my 8-year-old boy hits his mom and spits in her face, calls her a bitch, what do I do as a dad? You know what it said? Give him some time out. Naughty step. Tell him to think about what he did. I'm thinking, man, if my son did that, I'd be in prison for murder. You know, but like that's the advice from ChatGPT. So soldiers maybe being given yellow cards is maybe similar to parents giving timeout, sit on the naughty step after your kid did something terrible.
Yeah, and I think you talk about resilience. We went through a period where, I don't know if you remember, but we lost two guys on selection. It was during a summer selection. It was really hot in Wales. And we lost two guys on selection. Now, we don't want to lose anybody during the selection process. But what happened then was health and safety came along and said, right, you know, it's hot and you're putting these guys out there. They've got heavy packs on, not drinking enough water. They're going long distances. You just need to stop. And we were like, well, we can stop. We can just stop altogether. But once we do that, we're then going to send them to Iraq and Afghanistan where it's like 50 degrees. They're carrying twice as much weight. They won't get half as much water than they're getting here. So we're going to lose more people in the long run.
Right.
And Mr. Health and Safety went, just carry on.
Yeah, that's right. Preparing. I think, I don't know what you think about this. Certainly for me, with raising my children, because I can't help see the pattern. When I see people that are very successful, people, movers and shakers, making things happen, commanders, leaders, they often had a tough childhood. You know, they had a rough childhood. I mean, I'm not going to say I had it really, really rough, but it was a bit uncomfortable at times. And, I got stabbed in the head as a teenager, beaten up many times, picked on and misunderstood and suspended from school many times. So it wasn't easy, but that makes me the person I am, makes me strong. But now raising my kids, it's a tough one because they live in a mansion. They have everything, a little bubble, private schools. So I'm thinking, how do I raise my kids? I don't want to make it unnecessarily tough for them, but I also want them to understand, I want them to have resilience. I don't know if you've got any advice for me as a parent with young kids.
Yeah, I don't think I'd give anybody advice, but I think you have the beauty that you've seen both ends of that. You've seen one end, which is tough. You've got to fight for everything. And you've seen the other side where you can afford to give your kids the life that you wish you had. And I think once you have that, you have perspective. And so you're never going to wrap your kids up in cotton wool because you want them to be strong. You want them to be able to fight for the things that they want. And it's that ability to endure. Mm. And so you can do it under controlled, you know, environments. So yeah, you go off, try this, you know, I'm not going to hand it to you. But if and when you do fall over, I'll be there to make sure you're all right. You know, you learn from it, you get up and you keep going. Mm. But I'll be there to make sure you don't break completely. And I think you're in a perfect position there where you can do that.
Yeah, that's great. That makes sense. Have you had any trouble run-ins with media?
Yeah, I've had plenty of run-ins.
How do you deal with that?
Media.
What's the worst one? What was the worst that you can remember?
The worst one with the media. I don't know. There's been a few, but I think most of the time it's because they've taken part of a story like they normally do and they'll blow it into, you know, that one of the worst ones I remember, there was an article about mercy killings. And apparently I'd written about mercy killings in this book. And so, obviously I hadn't. And so I asked for the manuscript. Luckily for me, it was an audio transcript. So I had a whole audio file of everything that I'd said. But the damage was done. And the article was out saying, oh, he's going to write about these mercy killings, just shooting people and putting them out of their misery and stuff. And that hurt because it had a lot of third-party damage. It did a lot of damage to things out with the media. Might have been stuff with TV or books or relationships with friends and stuff, relationships with the military. And so that did a lot of damage. I was pretty close to suing the media. And but yeah, I've had a few. And I think it's hard to brush that off sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it sticks.
Yeah.
And it's there and it's always there. And I think if I have one of many weaknesses, it would be that I find it hard to let these things go, especially if I feel like there's been an injustice. That's not right.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to shift that. When if I was a bit stronger, I could just say it's water off a duck's back. You know, they can say what they like.
Yeah.
But when it does damage to you and the people around you,
yeah,
that's when it's harder.
It's kind of like resilience in a different way though, isn't it? You know, you might be out there doing your thing in the SAS and then when you've got people saying things online, you're in the public eye, you're getting criticized, you've got media problems. It's a different type of resilience.
Yeah, and I think it's because of the control. Because with us, it's things we can control. You know, I can put my big boy pants on, get out there and do it. But with that, I've got no control over it. It's attacking me and I can't, no amount of resilience will stop that from happening or having that impact on the people around me.
What do you want to be remembered for? What kind of, I mean, you're very well known. What kind of legacy do you want to leave?
I think you always want to help people. I think like what you're doing, I think if I help myself and my family, my kids and stuff, that's fine. But the more people you can have that ripple effect on, that's then going to affect even more lives and their children and everything else. Well, that's a great thing to leave behind.
How do you think you help people the most?
I think probably through the mental health, the resilience side. I think both through the charities, the children's panels that I'm on, through the talks that I do. I would hope that people would get something from the resilience side that would help them in some part of their life.
I think impact, man. I mean, I actually retired quite young from my property business, but I found just swanning around, listening to the birds sing, it's actually quite boring. So when I started training and educating people, set up made a business out of it, for me, gets me out of bed in the morning. I know I won't be remembered for the amount of money that I made. I'll be remembered for the impact that I made. I'll take the money, but you know, impact is important. What would you say then, if you were speaking to your younger self from like, I don't know, how old are you now?
I'm 51 now.
51. So going back speaking to your 21-year-old self, what would you say?
I don't know. There's not much I would do different. I always tell people you can never have regrets because if you went back in time, you'd do exactly the same as what you did. You know, that's why you did them. I mean, I was in the army since I was 15. 21, I was thinking about going for SES selection. You know,
I passed it. 15 years old.
Yeah. You could go to Ireland at 17, be shot and blown up. You weren't old enough to drink alcohol.
So what are you most excited about tonight? And what was it that made you agree to come down?
I think the same as you. I think that resilience. I think having impact. Obviously, you've got these 4 days and there's so much information, downloading, learning, and you want to get as much out of it. But if I can sprinkle just a little bit of resilience on there.
I hope you can, Matt. And that's the reason we wanted you, because they've been doing property. Pick up the phone, do this, work out this number, work out the ROI. But having you come down for a bit, and obviously they'll know who you are if they've got a TV. You know, I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the podcast as well. And let's enjoy some dinner and some happy networking.
Look forward to it.
Real pleasure. Thank you, Colin.
Thanks, mate.